Welcome to the Myths That Make Us podcast. And today we have on a Onnit trainer. Her name is Natalie. I don't know if I should be giving out people's last names, but I think I already do. So it is Natalie Higby. And we get into her myth and the stories that she really loved. And there's some interesting moments. You know, it's one of those things where, and that's a phrase that I say a lot. It's one of those things that, but there's a common theme that I'm beginning to see. And it's, there's a conceptual map that you can bring to dream interpretation that also will help you understand psychedelic experiences like hallucinations and visions. But it also, you can use the same framework on how people retell the stories that they love. And there's this odd connecting thread between a way of interpreting, like you can interpret a story the same way that you interpret a dream. And there were some really interesting insights on this podcast for me personally about using people's stories as if they were dream material and then interpreting it through that lens. And that offered for some pretty interesting insights that Natalie and I talked about after the podcast, you know, because a lot of the stuff that happens on this podcast or that could happen on this podcast, it's probably not best for it to be recorded and shared with thousands of people. It's probably better to happen off air. And so I just want to take a moment to say thank you for all of you who come on the podcast and share your stories. Like this can become really personal stuff, like the type of stuff that if shared with people close to you could change your life, you know? And I just want to take a moment to honor and say thank you to the people who are willing to come on and do the dance. The question today that I'm going to try to explain why I ask it is, who were the people in your early life that you admired and what qualities in them were you most drawn to? The reason that I ask this question kind of goes along with why I ask the what was the first story that you remember falling in love with? And it's because I think that our intuitional mind, our unconscious mind, is massive and powerful and ancient and old and wise. And one of the ways it tries to talk to the conscious mind is through what we are interested in, what catches our eye. And there's a thing inside of us that knows the type of human that we could become, just like inside of the seed. There's something in the seed that knows it can become a tree, and it's trying to absorb material from the world that it can alchemize in such a way that helps the seed transform into a tree. And I think one of the things that our psyche is doing is it's looking for modes of behavior that's embodied in other people as examples for how we could be in order to become who we could be. And I think admiration and then imitation are reflections of that process. So without you even being able to help it, you admire people. You can't consciously pick who you admire. You can consciously direct your awareness to look for people, but what you admire is a feeling that you don't have conscious control over. And if you look at the people that you admire, if you take a moment and really ask, like, what is it about them that I admire? It's always a mode of being. It's a behavioral pattern, either of the way that they think, some type of emotional quality that they embody, or habits that they have, or specific things that they've done, which are behavior patterns. And I think when we really connect to these people that we admire and we look at the qualities that they embodied, it's an invitation to us about the things that we know we could embody. And so it's an invitation to grow and to change and to try to be in such a way where we are more like those qualities. So I just think it's kind of a way to tap into our internal compass. So that's why I ask that question. As always, I truly appreciate you guys taking the time to listen to this podcast. It is my honor to be doing it, and I plan on doing some form of it until the day that I die. And hopefully that's a long ways away from now. Thank you for listening, I truly appreciate it. I love you guys. Namaste. Natalie, thank you for coming on the Myths That Make Us podcast.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here and excited about this. And I'm looking forward to seeing what comes up as we chat.
To let everybody know who have been listening to the podcast, she has not listened to any episodes. And so she might have no idea where this is going to go. So this is going to be perfect.
I actually think that's better for me right now. Like I said, no expectations. Didn't really plan anything. So it'll be authentic.
The question that I like to start with is, if I met you directly after you did something that kind of put you in your peak flow state, and then I asked you, where are you from and what do you do? What would you say?
I would say that I'm from Dallas, is what I would say. What I do is help people improve their lives. When I think about a flow state, just you mentioning that, I think of me being a teacher first and foremost. And even in the paths that I've kind of chosen as my career, as a personal trainer or as a third grade teacher, through all of that, it's always been about really connecting with people and teaching them something valuable that can help them improve their lives. Third grade wasn't about teaching math or science. It was about helping people, young people, be better citizens later in life.
For sure.
And as a trainer, it's really the same thing. It's about getting people out of pain physically or mentally and learning how to just take hold of themselves and ownership of their life and just be better. So
absolutely.
When I'm connecting with people and I'm teaching, that's my flow state.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
How would your, and this might, these questions might sound jarring, but I promise that they'll make sense once we kind of weave through all this stuff. How would your best friend describe you?
Kind. By the way, my best friend just had a baby. So I just Skyped with her yesterday. She lives in Sweden and we've known each other since we were young, but kind, supportive, almost like a counselor, I feel like.
For sure.
Sporty, outgoing,
yeah,
athletic, yeah. And I think just compassionate.
How would your dad describe you?
That could make me cry right there. Just because I love my dad so much. I think my dad would describe me as smart, loving, strong, kind.
How would your mother describe you?
Maybe a little more stubborn. But still, I think loving, kind, funny, goofy. Stubborn comes to mind again, though. My mom working on that one with her.
Yeah.
But yeah.
How would your partner describe you?
I want to say like communicative. Again, strong, hardworking, authentic, genuine, loving, caretaking, sensitive, probably.
Let's say that you're in whatever experience makes sense for you to experience this part of, you know, the world, and you could call it God or consciousness or spirit. But let's say, and maybe you're in a dream. I don't know if you've done psychedelics, but maybe if you're in that experience.
I'm not close to it, but I know.
For sure. Whatever altered state, maybe it's a dream or maybe it's prayer, maybe, you know, it's during like a church service where they're playing the music and but you're coming face to face with that thing that we call God. How would that thing describe you?
I want to say full of energy, life, excitement. Again, like a learner and a teacher. Very motivated. want to say connected again to, I think of nature when I think of like the spirit for me, like being outside and something like that. So very like in tune with people in general and animals, nature, things like that.
For sure.
Yeah.
What do you remember as your first memory? The first thing that comes to mind.
When you say that, the first thing that comes to my mind is playing in the front yard with a bunch of my neighbors. And specifically, my dad and my brother one time, this might sound really bad, but putting me in a box and shooting hockey pucks at me, I used to think that was really funny. Just playing in my neighborhood, playing in the park, playing in my front yard. Everything was outside, running around without shoes type of thing. We had a really nice community growing up.
So. Yeah. What would you say is the primary emotion that you take away from that memory?
The word that comes to mind is community. So maybe that connection, like a sense of belonging, like that tribe almost.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just love and support for those people.
What's the first dream that you remember having? For most people, for almost everyone I've asked this question to, the first dream is almost always a nightmare. What do you remember being like the first memory that you have of, oh shit, that was a dream?
I don't know if I can remember my first dream. Yeah. I don't have many nightmares, but I do dream a lot. That's a tough one because I don't know if I remember my first dream.
Okay.
I have been trying to get better about writing my dreams down though.
Yeah, I think that's
crucial. I feel like I
wake
up every day, I'm like, oh, I dreamt. It's usually about the people that are that I surround myself with.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
But you can pass on that one. All right. What's the first story as a kid that you remember either reading or watching over and over and over again? I don't know if you've ever taken care of like a young child, like if, but they tend to find a movie or a book that they demand be played or read to them 100 times. What's the first one that comes to mind when I ask, what was the most memorable story, book or movie from your childhood?
Movie would be Free Willy. I watched that one over and over again. There were quite a few, but I absolutely love Free Willy. Book, I don't quite remember what book I really loved to listen to. I really loved hearing stories about my parents.
Interesting.
So the first thing that came to mind when you asked about a story was my grandmother, who passed away when I was in 7th grade, but she was my ultimate like favorite storyteller. And I think she probably told me every story 100 times. You know what I mean? Like every time I would see her, I would ask her to tell me the stories.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't that she was, and she loved books. It wasn't that we read books together though. But she just told me stories about my dad. That was my dad's mother. And I love, and my aunt and his, my uncle. So his brother and sister as well. I absolutely loved listening to stories about them growing up.
So I'm going to invite you to do something. I guess first, what story that your grandmother told you about your father is the one that stands out the most?
There's two. It's where he got hurt, though.
Yeah.
One was a story about, I guess this one would be the most because I wrote about it as a kid, too, in school. I remember it was like a machete. So he was playing in a garage with his friend, and they found a machete, and he cut his leg open with the machete, and he was walking on the street trying to get home, and someone found him, and then they contacted her, and he lied to her about it forever, said that he fell on a stick outside because they didn't want to get in trouble. And it wasn't until like way later in life that he told her that it was actually a machete. I thought that story was hilarious as a kid.
Yeah.
And then another was him getting hit in the face with a baseball at baseball practice and his glasses shattered. And she heard about it on the radio, not knowing it was about her son. And then later found out that it was him and she had to go help him. So it was two ones where I guess he got hurt, but he was okay.
Yeah. What would you say were the, if you had to pull a common thread out of each of those stories, what do you think is the most interesting piece of those two stories? Because the thing that comes up in me is like the your dad basically trying to save his mom's feelings by not telling her the truth. And he's over there being reckless, you know, but he's having a good time as a kid.
Yeah, I think that would be it. I think it would be you not wanting to disappoint your parents in a way, right? So he didn't want her to know what actually happened. She was sticking up for him. Another piece is, so she ended up in the hospital when it was the machete one, telling, the doctor was like, there's no way that was a stick. It was too clean. And she fought tooth and nail to say, my son wouldn't lie to me. And then later found out that he did.
Yeah.
And I think it's just that motherly, maybe just a parent, it could be a father, but standing up for your kid and believing them and being right there by their side when they need you.
Yeah.
Her kind of like coming to protect him.
So this is going to be weird. Maybe it's not weird, but imagine you're your grandmother and you're telling yourself, the child version of you, a story, and the story is Free Willy. And you're going to retell the story to her, maybe like 2 to 3 minutes. But just imagine, you know, like it's the end of the day, your granddaughter's asking you for a story and you're going to tell her the story of Free Willy. How would you tell that story?
I don't quite remember all the names.
Right.
But
remember
that's okay.
That, yeah.
Okay.
So just how this feels.
Once upon a time.
Exactly.
There was a young boy who, we'll say, was in foster care. I think he was in foster care. And he would run around with his friends, kind of getting into trouble, skateboarding, getting caught by the police and whatnot. And he comes to a family. He ends up finding a family that will take him in and kind of protect him. They want to keep him as their son and help him find the right path in life. This young boy ends up working, finding a facility where there's a whale. And this whale becomes this boy's friend. And here's where I really don't remember the movie that well, even though it's my favorite, but I just remember, okay, the young boy feeds the whale every day. As their friendship grows, he swims with the whale, he talks to the whale, and at one point they want, look, I don't even remember if they want to set the whale free or if he doesn't. He does, right? Have you seen Free Willy?
I have, but again,
it's, am I just making this up now?
No, Eric? But this is perfect. So okay. This is exactly the point of what we're trying to get to.
Okay, and I'm just gonna go with, so the young boy decides that it would be best for the whale if he could free the whale. So he comes up with a plan to put the whale back in the ocean and set it free. When the whale goes into the ocean, the boy finds out that there's other mean people who are basically fishing with nets and killing whales and such. And so the boy somehow devises a plan to let Willie know where the nets are and his path to freedom.
Yeah.
So he leads them to another part of the ocean where, I just remember, where he jumps over the rocks and Willie gets free on the other side of the ocean away from the fishermen.
My hypothesis is that the story that most resonates with us as a kid kind of sets the tone for how we look at the world. Ooh. As a child. And but we will circle back to this and see if the threads start to connect. But
is that like setting someone free?
Oh, I mean, I
saving
think so.
People?
Yeah, right. And what's curious is like, you know what? Yeah, we can just get into it. So it sounds like the way you told the beginning, you know what? We won't get into it yet.
Wait,
we'll get back to it.
I'm excited because yeah. I do see now that I've never thought about this.
Yeah.
But I kind of see my life being wanting to save people in a sense.
This is what this podcast is all about.
Yeah. Even in the people I've dated, I'm not saying now, but like as a younger, like teenager, it was kind of like I chose the rough ones wanting to like, I don't know, help them in some way.
Yeah, I appreciate the honesty. Lots of people are like that, but not a lot of people would admit that on a podcast. So that is good. That's authentic.
And in friends, I mean, people I would befriend.
For sure.
But I could see that coming out in that that way as well, in like a relationship.
I wanted to make a pun as whale and as well, but we won't do it. We won't do it.
Love puns.
When you were a child, who were the, let's pick 2 to 3 people, real or unreal, so they could be in movies or books, that you most admired? Who were they? And I'm going to ask a follow-up question.
Okay. For sure, my grandmother, the one that I was talking about before. called her Grammy. Any three people?
Mm-hmm.
I can't. It's hard to choose. But it all goes to family.
You can choose four if you want.
Okay. I was going to say my brother. Mm-hmm. I was a huge tomboy. I would wear all of my brother's clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Did everything my brother did, basically. So I for sure looked up to him. And then my mom and my dad. Me and my parents are still together right now, and I've seen them kind of go through ups and downs, but I admired knowing what my mother has been through too in her past, just how strong she was for our family. And then
for sure,
I was always a big daddy's girl.
And so you're already starting to answer the next question that I was going to ask, but what is the one trait for each of those four that you admire the most?
My grandmother was, she was just so creative and fun. Like, as a grandmother, she was so full of life, you know? I loved playing games with her, listening to stories, dressing up, doing tea parties, looking for toys in the attic. Like, just so fun for me, just full of life.
Yeah.
And adventure. And then my brother would be, I would say goofiness. My brother is way more funny than I am. I think, like, I just kind of would watch him, you know, like he would do stuff and I would laugh.
Yeah.
That was kind of that. And then my dad is wisdom for sure. Like, I talk to my mom more, but when I talk to my dad, it's like those deep conversations. It's kind of always that way. Like,
he gives
those pieces of wisdom. And for my mom, it's that love, just the glue to the family, kind of, you know, like, and really giving herself to others, which I wish she would take some more, you know, more often, but at the same time, I admire what she did for all of us.
So the primary way that we learn as a child is through imitation, you know, and it's pre-verbal. And I think that the people that we admire, they have traits that something inside of us that's smarter than the part of us that talks sees. And it's like, those are traits we need, you know? And so the people that we admire, the traits in them that we admire are traits that we know we could have that we're trying to cultivate. Does that resonate?
Yes.
Now, when you flip that, this question is harder.
Okay.
Who are the two to three people that you feared or disliked the most as a child, real or unreal? Like, this question tends to be easier to answer if you think about people from like movies and books and stuff like that.
People that I feared.
Or hated as a child. And I saw a smirk come across your face, so I know there's some ideas that came up.
Well, I think this one's tough for me. Because it's not easy for me to think about, I don't even remember what I feared. One thing that comes to mind is, like, I remember fearing the movie E.T. Like, that scared me.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe like...
That's one.
The alien.
Mm-hmm.
Although I loved that movie, but it would scare me.
Yeah.
Bad. I didn't like scary movies. I don't know, Eric.
This is a hard question because...
This one's hard for me. Fear. What did I fear?
So the way that our conscious mind operates is...
Why don't I know that?
It actively inhibits that stuff. Like, it actively is like, nope, we don't need to look at that. You know, and so it's hard to get direct access to this question, but I like to ask it.
I think it's a great question. I'm now wondering why I can't remember, like, what did I fear?
What would you say is the quality from E.T. that was most disturbing?
Just the... As much as I love that movie, there was something just inside of me that would kind of, I was just scared to look. I don't know, like maybe the way he looked. I can, maybe it was also like, if you remember that movie, like the way people acted about him, like I remember them dressing up in suits. Like, so it was the picture of like, this is a scary thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And as a kid, maybe that just made me feel like, if I were to see an alien, that would be terrifying.
Yeah.
Like that, like just something very different than myself.
So the reason I asked this question is I think this is the inverse of the part. I think it's the inverse of the question about who do you admire and what traits in them are you trying to embody. The things that we're most afraid of or that we dislike the most, it looks like you remembered something.
Well, now I'm kind of thinking, I didn't really fear my grandfather, but that my mom's dad was a little more of like an enforcer.
For sure.
Kind of scary. Even my dad's dad a little bit. I kind of feared my both grandfathers a little bit. Not that they like did anything to me.
For sure.
But yeah, I think their level of like intensity, I was really scared to get in trouble from them.
Yeah.
Both of them.
What quality from, so the, would you say that for both of your grandfathers, it was the same quality that you feared, which was basically like the forceful use of power to inflict pain? Like,
yeah, I think so. Just, I don't think I've ever liked getting in trouble or being wrong, I guess, in that right. sense. So,
hi, you're a human.
Yeah, I think it was just getting in trouble, not being liked in that sense or whatever, you know what I mean? Like having my grandfather recognize that I was doing something wrong and then
right.
whether it was spank me for it or just tell me not to do it, I don't know. Yeah. I think that just scared me.
For sure. The reason that I asked that question is I think that this is the yin to the yang of the first question. And I think the people, both real and unreal, or both real and fictional, that we feared, the qualities in them that we feared are qualities of our personal shadow that we have to really pay attention to. And so, keep that in there, Ryan. I'm joking. Do you see, so there's a common thing that happens with people where they'll say like, I wasn't myself today, or I lost myself today, or whatever. When those moments happen, that's when our shadow side seems to kind of take reign. Mm-hmm. Would you say that the quality in your grandfathers can come out in you when you quote unquote lose your mind or lose yourself or get lost in the sauce?
Get lost in the sauce. I'm sure there's part of that. When I think of me not being myself in the day, though, it's me not being, it's when I'm too much in my head. So personally, I think that when I have those days where I'm not myself, I view it as like I'm not myself either in my head or towards others, but I don't show, yeah, that like love and compassion towards others. And I'm a little more just, we can call it stressed. You know what I mean? I'm overthinking
yeah.
things like that. Versus
you're constantly trying to plan where the nets are so the whale yeah. doesn't go into the nets.
Yeah. That.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be when I feel when I'm lost in the sauce.
Lost in the sauce.
Yeah. But I'm sure a part of that maybe could come from not wanting to do something wrong still.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. What do you remember being the first thing that you got good at as a child that gave you a sense of power or competence? Like for me, it was sports. Well, it was arguing with teachers and then playing basketball were the two ways that I kind of found power as like a early teenager. For you, what were those things?
Soccer was the first. That was actually like my first love. And as I ended up really loving basketball, I still do, and volleyball, that's kind of what I stuck with. But I was too shy to play both of those for a long time. I felt like once you got the ball, everyone looked at you, and I did not want to be that one person with the ball.
Wow.
So that wasn't until like fifth or sixth grade that I picked up volleyball or basketball and really started playing that. I would play for fun. But soccer was a little more like you could run around the field. I loved it. I don't know. And I've always loved defense more yeah. than offense. I'm not really the one who wants to take the shot.
Interesting.
Necessarily. So yeah.
I was the fucking opposite.
Yeah. Which I think a lot of people are. I'm like, I take pride and I'm going to block your shot or I'm going to stop the ball or, yeah. you know what I mean? Like I'm going to be that last person before the basket basically or the goal and yeah. I'm going to stop it. So it was soccer for sure. And then when I think about school for me though, it was definitely I was kind of a little troublemaker, but I was also a teacher's pet. I made a lot of friends. I was pretty good in school. Mm-hmm. Like I was not the goody good kid. So I kind of got along with everyone, but I also made good grades like my teachers did.
For
like
sure.
I, you know, I had good relationships with them, but I also like got sent to the principal's office a few times, which maybe most like kindergarten or second grade girls don't do. So that happened. But I would say sports really. I mean, because I had an older brother, because we were always playing sports, I was always playing with the guys at recess. I mean, there'd be like maybe one other girl playing with me, but it would pretty much be like me and the guys. But I was pretty good. And I'd usually play with my girlfriends who I played with were a year older as well for a long time.
Wow.
And so I played like up a little bit. Actually, really cool story is my team when I was younger, and I must have been in, I think, fourth or fifth grade. Because again, some of these girls were a little bit older, and it had to be in sixth grade or younger. So it was like fourth, fifth grade. Our soccer team was so good that we couldn't play in the championship against the girls because we just kept like beating everyone. And they put us in the boys league the next year. So we played all boys teams and we ended up getting first place in that league.
Oh my God. That's wild. Was this in Dallas?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
It was really cool. So I would say that like gave me confidence in a sense,
absolutely,
right? Like to beat boys even, like that was really awesome because they would all doubt us.
Yeah.
And yeah. So that was myself, but also just that group of women, strong women that I was surrounded by.
Absolutely.
Which probably carries into today as well.
Yeah. So. Because you got that good at sports at that age, what was your first like life dream about this is what I want to be? And what was it?
Well, I'm thinking of, because we were such huge soccer fans, Mia Hamm at the time when the USA women won. And I just picture like Mia Hamm taking off her shirt and like sliding on the field. That was for sure like who we wanted to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is, I think, one of the most important things that happens to us. I think one of the most important things that happens to us is when our first dream kind of dies because the world is like, that wasn't actually what you're here to do. Because for me in high school, I truly was dumb enough to think that I'd play in the NBA. And then when I tore my rotator cuff, it was like, okay, that's not going to happen. And I went through like a period of depression for a while. What I'm curious is, it seems like as an athlete, you had a primary goal as a teenager of like, I'm going to play for the USA team. And then something happens where that goal has to be updated. I'm curious, when was the first time in your life that you kind of hit that moment of, wow, the way that I look at the world is wrong and I have to change my course?
Well, I will say that it didn't even last till I was a teenager. Because if you wanted to continue to get good at soccer, you had to play select. And I remember as a young kid, just knowing that my family did not have enough money for me to play select soccer. And as much as I loved it, I didn't want to put them under the stress of trying to pay for me to play select soccer. So I chose not to continue to play. My junior high and high school teams were not that great. So I just played in junior high and then didn't play in high school.
I see.
So it was like my dream of playing soccer truly ended as I went into junior high, and I just decided to not put my family in that position.
So then I guess the real question is, what was the first dream that you had about what you wanted to be that you were all the way bought in?
So the other one would be a teacher. I can remember I always wanted to be a teacher. I always figured I would teach and coach. And I did end up going to school for that. So I got my degree in education. But that's not what I used my degree for right out of college.
Yeah.
So that shifted there. I think I've always been kind of open. The other side of that is I've been open to whatever comes. And I try not to stick to necessarily one thing. I think at the heart of what I really always wanted to do was help people.
Yeah.
So for me, that can take shape in different ways. And it has. And I still don't think that that's done. You know, like, I don't think I'm at the end place for that either.
For sure. You have a lot, You have a lot of life to live.
Yeah. And I think even looking ahead, if I were to think like, okay, well, what's my end goal? Like, I don't know if this is good or bad, but I don't really have one. I just know I want to continue to do what I'm doing and get better at it and reach more people in whatever capacity that is. So I decided I would be a teacher. But I remember thinking later in life, I wish I would have chose something different.
What do you mean?
I'm happy with that now. But at the time, I feel, you know, when you're a kid, people are like, what do you want to be? Like a teacher, a firefighter, a doctor. Like the options are so limited. Mm-hmm. That's what I remember.
I want to be an email marketer.
Yeah. Like especially with technology, you know, like that changed the job game tremendously, but it just seemed like options were limited. So I chose one of those. Oh, I'll go the teacher route. Mm. And I remember thinking later, like, why didn't someone tell me that there were so many other options as to what I could do in life? I've been happy doing what I do, but I can remember just thinking that, like, that there's so many other things out there that people can be. And I don't think that people let kids know that. It's like we stick with the same ones, kind of.
Yeah, like this same set types of like 10 mm-hmm. or 12 possible jobs, like astronaut, cop.
Yeah.
Yeah. So given what you know now, what is it that you would go back and want to tell the younger you to become?
I think I would still want to go down the path that I've chosen and be a teacher. I think that that was a great career choice for me. But I think going to a younger me, it would just be building up my confidence so much more.
Yeah.
I think just being really confident in who I am and what I have to offer. Still working on that.
What advice would you give other women who might feel like they're trying to work on that exact same thing?
Confidence?
Yeah. Like, how can they do that?
I think maybe journaling would be a good choice for me. I'm thinking like, if you put yourself in a position where you have to be vulnerable and then kind of overcome something, and then you do, then just really like take note of that. So maybe write it down. You know, like just those things where it's like when you're noticing that you're doing a good job, like give yourself that credit,
yeah,
I guess. And I think for me, it was just kind of like, that's what I should have been doing, but I can still do it better. You know, like, again, I didn't want to mess up, I guess. And so for other ladies, I just think that it's anybody really, but give yourself permission to go into something that you can fail at. So a scary situation of some sort. And when you do well, because you probably will, or even if you don't, there's things that you can take away from that, but write it down and just take note of kind of how badass you are. You know what I mean? Like give yourself credit.
Yeah.
Versus just, I think, a lot of times I would just be hard on myself, you know, like after something would happen.
Yeah.
You criticize, I guess, versus looking at.
And so I'm curious, at the point that you're at right now, what do you see as, well, you know what? I'm going to change this question. Okay. Imagine the woman that you could be, let's say that she's 80 and you've done everything that you've wanted to do. If that woman were to come to you in your dreams and were to give you a piece of advice, what would she tell you?
To not give up on myself or my dream. To have patience, to continue to work towards something. I think seeing things through, so like finishing, that was my one word for this year that I chose for myself, was to finish something. I think there's been times where I'll like start something or want to do something and then not really let myself actually finish it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And this year it was about like having the confidence, do whatever it is that I say I'm going to do, see it through, finish it, and then build on that.
Yeah.
But I think with that, I would hope that my 80-year-old self would tell me to just have that strength and courage to do those scary things and to have the patience to like continue to follow through. You know what I mean? Like it'll come and just continue to kind of put one foot in front of the other.
So what's interesting is earlier you said that you don't feel like you do have a plan, but you said that your 80-year-old self would tell you not to give up on your dream. What's your dream?
If you were, well, so right now.
Right now.
Right now. That dream to me looks like a few things. One, I've always kind of wanted to be like a, like this Mother Teresa, Tony Robbins, like just like an inspirational person, specifically towards women, but really everyone. Mm-hmm. And I have a huge passion for health and wellness, fitness, but also nature. And so there's a piece of me that is, I don't know exactly what this looks like, but I want to have a home, like at least here at Onnit, where I can train people, but then be able to go do retreats of some sort where people are able to wake up early. We meditate, we journal, we go for walks, we connect, we learn something about ourselves. So like literally learning how to optimize your day, optimize your morning, optimize your life, and building on understanding ourselves better so we can better connect with other people. That's something I have a huge passion for. So I just want to help people, but it's I don't know exactly what that looks like. I just know that one could be in the training realm and I can continue to kind of build up groups of people that can help kind of make their own community to inspire each other and whatnot. Another one is just outside of the gym walls, being in nature, kind of having a place where people can gather and I can help lead them through like life-changing weekends or weeks would really be my ultimate goal.
An interesting thing that came up in me when you were saying, I just want to help people is what did you say about your mom at the beginning of the podcast?
Oh yeah. That sometimes I wish she would give herself a little bit of that.
Yeah.
Because she's always giving to others.
Do you do that? Do you give some love back to yourself?
I think I do. I try to because I know it's important, but I'm definitely better at giving for other people.
Same. Yeah.
You know, but I'm not aware of it. Even in the sense of like working out and eating right and all those other things, I try to do things that fill me up and make me feel better versus if I am specifically talking about my mom, as much as I love her, like she won't, there's just things she won't quite do that I know would help her life. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So it's like, I want her to take care of herself, like physically and mentally a little bit better. But yeah, I think she's just so busy giving to other people that.
So I'm going to try to transform this a little bit and see if we can connect some threads. Okay. If I asked you, what is your favorite movie of all time? What is the first thing that comes up? And maybe not favorite, what movie made the biggest impression on you throughout your entire life? What's the first one that pops up?
Can I ask a question?
That's the only question you can ask. I'm sorry. Yes, go ahead.
Why movies?
In our culture, I think that that's the most common connection that we have to myths. So it could be a book. Mm. But basically what I'm asking is, what story has had the biggest impact on you in your life?
This is a tough one for me. And I'll be honest, because I don't feel like I watch that many movies.
Mm-hmm. But I'd be willing to challenge you that something already popped up in your head, probably already like four times.
Well, I'm still thinking of Free Willy because we talked about that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Titanic was a big one.
No, let's go there. Okay. Well, let's go there.
Okay.
All right. Let's say that you're 60 and you're telling a story to your grandchild and she's 10 and she's really smart. And you're going to tell her the story of the Titanic. You have 2 to 3 minutes. It's nighttime, you know. How would you tell that story as if you were talking to her right now? Once upon a time.
Once upon a time. There was, oh, this goes into like a young, which is the same, isn't it the same boy? No. No, it's not. It's different. but basically like a young boy who is kind of living like the rebel life a little bit, who wins a ticket to go on this amazing ship that the wealthy people were going on, people with money. But he wins a ticket and he decides to go on this excursion. So the Titanic, I think at the time, was the biggest ship they had built to carry people across the ocean. I don't even remember where it was going.
It was the dopest.
Yeah, it was awesome. And so he gets this opportunity and he takes it. And out of all these people on the ship, he ends up seeing this one beautiful lady who catches his eye, and he wants to get to know a little bit better. Little did he know that she is engaged to marry a jerk, a not so nice guy. So we've got the evil guy. And somewhere along the way, they end up kind of connecting, and the girl kind of falls in love with the rebel boy and is kind of get like in and out of trouble on that ship. She's trying to live the life of the proper wealthy family and marry the right man versus the one who she feels like brings out the fun in her and the joy of life and truly connects to. So as they're traveling, the ship one night runs into a giant iceberg, which breaks through the ship, and there ends up not being enough lifeboats, I forget the word for them, but the small boats to save the people. And so the ship just starts sinking pretty rapidly, and they can't quite get enough people to come out and help them, and they can't figure out where to put all these people. And so everyone just keeps moving up the ship as the ship is sinking. And these two people, Jack and...
I don't remember their names, but I'm pretty sure the one is Jack.
It is Jack.
Rose?
Rose, yeah, Rose. Never let go. Okay, so they have to find each other as the ship is sinking. And they do end up finding each other, so she searches for him rather than the guy she's supposed to be with. And as the ship sinks, they end up finding a door to lay on. And the water's so cold, though, that only one of them, they can really only fit one on the door, and the other one has to get in the water and just hope that someone comes and saves them in time. And it's Jack who kind of sacrifices himself for Rose to be on top of the door. And he just tells her to never let go as he kind of drifts off. So Jack ends up dying and Rose gets saved. And then she's an old lady who doesn't really tell... Oh, there's like a necklace in it. I would throw that in there somehow. She has this necklace and she doesn't really tell someone. She ends up dropping into the water as a really old lady, kind of reminiscing about it and kind of putting the necklace back in the water where her loved one passed.
So I think my hypothesis is that the story that most resonates with us as an adult is kind of it's mixed with the first story and it's our story. And the motifs in that journey are things that are happening in our lives. And we don't need to get into it on the podcast, but I think it's something that you can like journal about and explore about, that the Free Willy story and the Titanic story, there are commonalities amongst both of those that are part of the pattern that you have for your life, about how you see your life, what the adventure is before you, what choices you're trying to make, where you're trying to go, and what ending the thing that you're inside of wants. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Like if you imagine the story as a river and the ending as a destination, the myth that we're in right now is carrying us towards that part. And what's interesting is there's this idea of the main character, which is a part of you, sacrificing themselves for the other person to be free.
Mm-hmm.
Free Willy and Rose.
You're so right. I definitely do that a lot.
And there's also a deep pattern of like the ocean. I don't quite know what that might represent, but in both of those stories, kind of the ocean is both the good guy and the bad guy. Like the ocean is what frees, but it's also what takes away. You know, like both the main characters are taken away by the ocean. Yeah. Well, Free Willy is taken away. And then Jack is taken away by the ocean.
I don't know what the ocean means quite yet. I will look into that because now I'm very, very curious. But even the part of sacrificing myself for someone else, I love to take like the personality tests, all these different things, like reading about who I am, trying to figure that out more. And one thing that always pops up is that like I would rather whether it's my loved one or just the people around me, I would rather see them succeed. Like I'll do anything to help them, you know? And sometimes I wish that would come back to me, but then I feel like I end up having to just kind of do that on my own, but I'm very quick to help others.
Mm.
Like very, very quick. I would rather, I don't know, maybe that's easier for me.
I'm sure it is easier.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is, again, it sounds like the advice that you have for your mom is actually the advice that you have for yourself too.
Yeah. I've thought about that many times. And as we get older, I'll tell my mom, I'm like, there are things she did that I kind of wish I didn't do to myself that I'll talk to her about, you know what I mean? So when I notice her saying those things about herself in a sense,
yeah.
Now I feel like I'm a little bit better about trying to like ask her why. I'm like, why are you? We both kind of take like, I don't want to say like take the blame for things. Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. Yeah, we'll put it on ourselves. And again, I think she's a very sensitive person. And as much as I think I'm a very strong person, I think I can be very sensitive and just like let little things get to me. But it's because I care so much about other people. A lot of times when I don't feel that in return, I get my feelings hurt. So that's something I'm trying to work on, of like trying not to have an expectation of just because I would treat someone one way doesn't mean that that's the way they are going to treat me.
Right. Because check this out. This is an interesting game that we play, but if you give an act of love with the expectation that an act of love has to be returned, it's not love.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like a loan. Like you owe me interest on this action or this act of service.
I agree with that.
Ooh, I can hear that you don't agree with that. No. About to say something.
Well, I'm just trying to think through this. I'm thinking, I don't think I ever think that there should be something in return. But how do I put this? At the same time, I think deep down I want someone to take care of me in the same way.
Sure.
And maybe their way looks different or other people, you know? So I'm just learning how to like see that for what it is versus how I show love, I guess.
Yeah.
It's not that I'm like trying to give one thing and be like, oh, you should do the same thing back. Mm-hmm. But
kind of a little bit.
Kind of, yeah. You know, like just trying to figure out if something seems so easy for me, why does it not seem easy for the other person?
Have you ever taken yourself out on a date?
I don't know if I've framed it that way, but yeah, what do you mean?
Yeah, like—
Dress myself up, take myself out?
Yeah, like maybe if you want to be treated how you're treating somebody else, what if you took yourself on a date? Like just you, and you go and you treat yourself to a date. You know, and that can look however you want to, that can look however you want it to look. Like for me, I take myself on a date, like I take LSD and I go to the movies alone and I just watch a movie.
And just hang out?
Yeah. And then I come home and I write, you know, like that's me taking myself out on a date.
I like that. I do. And so, well, I feel like I do a lot on my own, even though I'm in a relationship or I have a lot of friends. I do, for me specifically, I love... Like, I just love going for walks. So I was talking about, like, why movies? Because for me, so much more resonates with me, like, in nature.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I feel like I take myself on dates on long walks.
Long walks. Yeah.
Yeah. Heard. I do that a lot by myself.
So the way I like to end the podcast is I like to ask word association questions.
Okay.
And you just say whatever the first thing is that comes to your mind. And if you say something obscene that will get you fired, just let me know and I'll take it out of the podcast. Okay.
Okay.
Word or phrase that captures your life philosophy?
Treat others the way they want to be treated.
You know what's fascinating is I think you meant to say that differently and you slipped. You said treat others the way they want to be treated. Did you mean treat others the way you want to be treated?
No, I'll tell you why.
Yeah, interesting.
Because we would say this as a third grade teacher, we would talk to our kids about this, but if I'm treating you the way I want to be treated, that's not very mindful of the way you want to be treated.
Interesting. I've never heard it phrased that way, but that makes so much sense.
So when you're treating someone the way they want to be treated, that's more like you're understanding their love language or what resonates with them. So like if I bring you flowers and you don't like flowers, but I love them,
right,
doesn't really mean that I'm paying attention to what makes you happy.
Interesting. I like that. Word or phrase that cuts to the core of who you are?
Passion.
What are you most afraid of?
Being alone.
What is your most persistent problem?
Self-doubt.
Are you more street smart or analytic?
Both.
Do you prefer slow or fast-paced environments?
Fast.
Are you more of a rule follower or risk taker?
I want to say risk taker. I like to kind of be in the middle. That's what I was saying, was I was a good kid, but I kind of like get in trouble.
Heard.
I'm not complete rule follower. I like to take some risks.
Is your need for control low, medium, or high?
I would say medium.
Are you more intellectually or physically competitive?
Again, I feel like I'm right in the middle, but I want to say physically just because of kind of what I do every day, but intellectually, I feel like that's what I spend all my other time kind of doing.
Yeah.
I love reading. I love studying. I love deep conversations.
For sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Are you more critical of yourself or of others?
Myself.
Do you prefer fast or slow choices?
Choices? Maybe I take a long time to answer these questions. So I'm going to say slow.
Pressure comes from
our beliefs, ourselves.
And pressure feels like in the body.
I want to say like that feeling in your stomach, almost like a excitement, nervousness.
In my tribe, I am, and is one of the four, queen, warrior, magician, or lover.
Lover.
It all comes down to
love.
Success is
happiness.
Love is
unconditional.
My vision
to spread.
I joy. Am. Oh, I'm sorry. No,
it's okay. I just say to spread like knowledge and joy.
I am.
I've been telling myself I am a strong and confident woman.
My purpose.
To teach.
The most defining moment of my life.
Choosing to stay where I graduated from and work a job that is not what I went to school for. So choosing to be a personal trainer over moving back to Dallas and being a teacher at the time. It's a career choice.
Last question.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say that you are at the end of your life You've lived as long and as fully as you've wanted to. You've done the things that you wanted to do. You know that the next day you're going to die peacefully in your sleep. How do you spend that last day, and who do you spend it with?
Outside. Just being one with nature, with my family, for sure. I could be on a beach, would be wonderful. I would love to watch the sunrise and the sunset. Those are two of my favorites. Yeah, good music, good people, being outside.
And let's say that you get to leave one note to your great-granddaughter, who is 10. What would you say to her?
To believe in herself and to always seek to understand herself, to have patience, and to just know her value.
Thank you for coming on.
Thank you, Eric. I enjoyed it.